My guest is Jonathan Clements. He is the founder and editor of Humble Dollar. He's also the author of a fistful of personal finance books, including From Here to Financial Happiness and How to Think About Money. In a recent article on how, in his words, what he calls the five freedoms and the pursuit of money are so intertwined, I thought it was a terrific article, and I've asked Jonathan to come on to speak about it. Welcome back to the show, Jonathan.
Hey, Steve. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
It's great to have you. In your article, you referenced the inspiring speech given by FDR at the beginning of World War II. The four essential freedoms were listed there, and they were called. What were those four essential freedoms that FDR spoke about?
Yeah, this was a speech that FDR gave in early 1941. It was actually the State of the Union address. And he talked about four essential human freedoms: freedom of speech, of worship, from fear, and from want. And actually, I hadn't realized this until after I wrote the article and a reader got in touch with me. This reader actually sent me a series of stickers from the 1944 presidential campaign. And the four freedoms were what FDR campaigned on in 1944. But at the time, in 41, he was really preparing America to go to war.
Yeah, and giving a reason to go to war in terms of what we needed to protect.
Right. These were sort of, in FDR's mind, core American values. And I think that, you know, we would all agree with that today. Freedom of worship, of speech, from fear, and from want. Those are things that we all want.
Well, you're a thoughtful guy, and you wrote an article thinking about those four and turning them into what you've come up with, which is five freedoms or dimensions that having money offers a person. So let's start with that. The first one is freedom from fear. Explain to us how money and freedom from fear are interrelated.
So when we think about money, you know, it's really a tool to enhance our lives. The goal isn't just to have a big pile of money. It's somehow to make our lives better. And this list of freedoms that I drew up are really an aspirational list, things that I think people should strive for. And freedom from fear is at the top of the list. I mean, we all want a sense of financial security. And yet, you know, the data tell us that many Americans don't have that, that they live paycheck to paycheck. They worry about how they're going to pay the monthly bills. They worry how they would fare if they lost their job. But the research also points to an interesting solution to all of this. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has done surveys to measure America's sense of financial well-being. And what they found is the biggest driver of financial well-being is simply having a little bit of money in the bank. Mm-hmm. If you can accumulate $5,000 in a checking account or a savings account or some other kind of cash account that you have easy access to, that can measurably improve your sense of financial well-being.
The idea of knowing that if there is an unforeseen circumstance, a financial hit of some kind, that there's money there to cover it can offer you a lot of peace of mind.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we know is that we're not very good at predicting the future. And I'm not just talking about the stock market and the direction of interest rates. We're also very bad at predicting what's going to happen in our own lives. We're not very good at anticipating that we will have rough times. And yet, the fact is, there are very few normal months. Almost every month, there's a surprise expense that we somehow have to cope with. And if you have that money in the bank, you'll be in a better position to cope with those surprises.
I don't think there's any question that having excess money will reduce our fear of, you know, what the ramifications of an uncertain world and so on. So let's move to number two. Freedom from financial dependence.
So as I explained in the article, we're all dependent on one another to some degree, right? We expect others to help us by providing us with goods and services. None of us, you know, are completely free of other individuals. And certainly, you know, we wouldn't want a world where that was the case, where we all lived isolated existences. But to the extent that you are financially dependent on others, it does create some level of anxiety. I mean, I certainly don't want to be dependent on charity. I don't want to be dependent on the kindness of strangers, on a government program. I don't want to be dependent upon my family. So to the extent that you can ensure that you have the money so that you are not dependent on others financially, that is a good thing. And I would take this one step further, Steve, which is this financial dependence can even be extended to, you know, being employed. Mm-hmm. To some degree, you know, if you're relying on a company, a government institution, whatever it is, to provide you with a regular paycheck, that is a level of financial dependence. Now, if you love your job and you have a great boss, all's well and good. But if you have a bad boss, and I've had a few of those in my lifetime, mm-hmm. being dependent on that paycheck can feel sort of uncomfortable. And that's one of the pleasures that comes with being retired or running your own business, is that you are far less dependent on others in terms of that paycheck you have month to month.
You know, it's one of the reasons I never entered the corporate world. I didn't really want my livelihood to be dependent upon the vagaries of politics or of changes in direction in the company or a capricious boss. I wanted to have more financial security. And in the business I was in, which was the investment advisor business, you know, I had hundreds of bosses, so to speak. So if I were to be fired by one, it didn't hurt my livelihood. So I felt much more secure. And that was one reason that I really enjoy the investment advisory business so much, is the fact that there is a measure of independence from a singular source of power, let's say.
I absolutely agree with you. And I would say that being an employee of a large institution, you know, go back a couple of decades, that was actually considered to be relatively desirable. Large institutions were considered to be relatively stable. You could stay mm-hmm. in the job for many decades as long as you did a half-decent job. That simply isn't the case anymore. Even if you're excellent at what you do, in the next restructuring, you could be out of a job, no exactly. matter how good your employee reviews are, mm-hmm. no matter how many hours you put in. So being an employee has a downside. And, you know, in certain situations, it can be very uncomfortable and lead to a lot of financial distress.
The third freedom is freedom from financial obligations. What are you referring to there?
Well, again, we all have regular financial obligations, the mortgage or rent, the car payments, whatever it is. We do need to buy goods and services to keep ourselves going. But to the extent that those financial obligations consume a large part of your income, it's going to create anxiety. It's going to make your life seem more tenuous. So one of the rules of thumb that I often suggest to people is that you should make sure that your fixed living expenses, the mortgage, the rent, mm-hmm. the insurance premiums you pay, the utilities, the regular grocery bill, and so on, that those should not be eating up more than half of your pre-tax income. And to the extent that you can get it even lower, all the better, because the lower your fixed costs are relative to your income, one, you'll find it much easier to save money, but two, you'll also have extra money for so-called discretionary expenses, the fun stuff in life, going on vacation, going out to dinner, taking the family to an amusement park, going with your spouse to a concert or the theater. Those are the things that make life special, and you want to have the money to do those things. And the way you do that is by keeping your fixed monthly financial obligations as small as possible.
Yeah. This idea of being house poor is the way we used to say it. So you may have a large house and you may enjoy that house, but there's really no room for anything else in your life for discretionary spending. So you don't want to be house poor. You want to keep everything within. And, you know, everybody has financial constraints. I mean, you know, millionaires don't have unlimited resources. You might think a billionaire, which, you know, it's kind of stupid to talk about them, but, you know, if they've got 17 homes all over the world, you know, they're going to come up against some financial constraints. So resources are not unlimited really for everybody. So we have to remember that. Let's move to number four, which is freedom from our own wants. That was an interesting one. Tell us about that.
So in the psychological literature, there's this word. I only came across it last year, but I love the word. The word is miswanting. And what academic psychologists mean by miswanting is that we set our sights on something, often a material good, and we want it so badly because we're sure it's going to vastly improve our lives. And yet, more often than not, even if we get this possession that we desperately, desperately want, we might get a brief thrill out of it, but often it doesn't improve our lives. And instead, all it does is lead to a much smaller bank account. So we need to become much more thoughtful about how we spend our money so that we avoid this miswanting. And one of the things that I encourage people to think about when they contemplate spending money on a major purchase or something else is to say to themselves, what will my future self think about the money that I spend today? Mm-hmm. Because when you spend money today, what you're doing is not only buying something that your future self is going to have to live with, but also spending money that your future self will not have to spend. Mm-hmm. And worse still, if you go into debt to make this purchase, your future self is going to have to repay the money involved. So as you spend money today, think about the implications for your future self, and to the greatest extent possible, try to make sure that your future self is not unhappy.
Well, if you think about making decisions to take care of your loved ones, then I guess you should include your future self as one of your loved ones and get this idea in your head that, you know, looking back, your future self is going to say, you know, either you did good for me, thank you, or, you know, why did you do something so idiotic? In the interest of time, I've got one more here. Freedom to use our time as we wish.
And this is about, more than anything, using your money to create time, because ultimately time is the limited resource. You know, you're going to run out of time before you run out of money. So you want to make the best possible use of the time that you have. When you're in the workforce, buying time might mean hiring somebody to mow the lawn or clean the house to get you out of the chores that you really dislike doing. Later, if you're successful financially, you may be able to buy time in the sense that you leave that corporate job that you hate and opt for a career that's less lucrative, but which you may find more fulfilling. And ultimately, we have retirement, where your time is totally your own. I mean, that is true financial independence. And it's a goal that we should all strive for, because time is so valuable and you want to be able to call the shots on how you spend each and every day.
Good advice from Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of The Humble Dollar. Of Humble Dollar, go to humbledollar.com. And to hear this in any interview again, if you have a question, we love to get your questions. And remember to visit our website, which is stevepomerantz.com, to join our conversation. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly update for upcoming live events and the important topics we've covered this week straight into your inbox every single week. That's stevepomerantz.com. Jonathan, thanks so much once again for coming here and joining us today.
It was a great conversation, Steve. Thanks for having me on.